The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, welcome to Two Truths and a Dirty Lie, a podcast about facts, figures, and weird things from the past. I'm your host, Dez. I'm here with my co-host,
CMT, Timmy Tyre. Welcome to Two Truths and a Dirty Lie, a podcast where we do all the hard work so you can tell people fun stories about history, our parties, and make yourself seem more interesting.
See, yeah, Tim Tyre told me, he was like, Adesa, let's create a podcast where, like, people can use information and use it to flirt in parties. And I was like, I don't know anything about flirting. And that's how we came up with this podcast. So if you've ever used anything you listened on this podcast to strike up a conversation or get someone's number, you're
welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim Tai. You can thank Tim Tai. Don't thank me. I had nothing to do with that.
You're welcome.
So how you doing today, Tim Tyre?
I'm good. It's a lovely Thursday. You know, we've gotten through the worst in the week. The worst tends to be Thursday. So, you know, by the end of today, you would have gotten through the worst of the week and you'll be ready to take on the weekend.
True. Weekend starts on Thursday in Lagos. It used to before Buhari. No, I swear people don't go out until Friday 5 p.m.
Yeah, I just don't, you know, I'm not about that outside life anymore. I like to stay home and watch.
Sakba don't hook you for truth. Are you lying? Are you lying? I don't like to go out. It does not have petrol.
Oh, God.
Cannot go anywhere.
Oh, God.
So, you know, last episode, we were talking about how we're both lawyers and our dads are lawyers, right? What do you think your chances of being a lawyer would have been if your dad was not a lawyer?
Very high. Because I didn't have direction for a long time. And that's, I feel like it's probably why a lot of men in my family have gravitated towards law, just trying to figure stuff out. And you need a solid degree that you can do different things with to
plan out. What you're saying is that law is for people who have a lack of direction.
I mean, if you don't want to be a lawyer, if you don't see yourself being a lawyer or a judge, but you see yourself in corporate life, law is a pretty good degree to get, you know.
I mean, fair enough. Like, I graduated from uni and I came back to Nigeria and I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do, so let me cuckoo become a lawyer.
There you go.
So, fair enough. But I've been thinking about family feuds. I wanted to do a family feud episode. I think it's going to be a two-parter. We will do parents versus their kids, and then we'll do some sibling rivalry.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
Should we first start with some people and their parents fighting?
Yeah, I love a good family feud. I love European family feuds because then you'll have like, maybe like a family's last name historically was De Kleet, and then you'll now have some people will now change their branch to Van De Kleet or De Kleet something else just to show that.
Do you have any like a Nigerian political like family dynasty?
Oh, yes. There's like a ton of them. Such, I mean, I can just name any random political family.
No, I don't think so.
Or like family dynasties?
Yeah.
Yeah, just name like a random political family.
Such as?
I don't know, like Saraki or something.
Okay, this boy is shy. Use your chest. Saraki, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one in my head.
Senate,
like,
president, governor, and his dad before him was also a statesman.
Exactly. I mean, you don't even have to go political. You can just think of,
no,
like,
I'm thinking political because I'm doing like political family, you know, miraculous.
Yeah, so you have that. You have
Yaradua. You have Shehu Musa Yaradua, and then you have Yaradua, who's our actual president.
Typically, any sort of Nigerian last name that you know and your parents know.
I don't agree with that, you know, because I think, for the most part, I mean, if I'm wrong, but I was looking a lot into family dynasties, and I think we do have a few solid ones, but a lot of people are like
upstarts.
Yeah, first gen. My daddy was a village master and I'm now governor of my state. Like, no, I honestly think, like, we do have a lot of first gen. And we also don't really have dynastic, like, political families, I think, like to the level of where you have in other countries where like you have presidents following each other.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
For example, you know, in Togo, the, how do you pronounce it? The Nasingbe family, they've been ruling Togo for like over 50 years.
Yeah.
One family.
I mean, that's not a dynasty. That's an, that's a
fiefdom.
A, yeah.
So, and you know, so,
fiefdom is so funny.
Why? Oh, do you know the thing about that word is that I don't know like the literal definition, but I feel like I'm correct.
No, fiefdom is really a group of people that rule over a land. I think it's very much tied into land and real estate in that sense. So.
Okay, so it is a territory or sphere of operation controlled by a particular person or group.
Yeah.
Fiefdom, yeah, they turned a country into their family's fiefdom. Actually, yeah. That was, yeah, I used the word correctly. Okay, the Bhuttos, the Trudeaus, the Gandhis, the Lees, the Fujimoris. We really need to talk about the Fujimoris.
I said it.
We need to talk. You know what? You're going to do the episode. You're going to talk about the Fujimoris, honestly. So these are political dynasties. And I was looking at a study that they talk about the dynastic bias of different occupations. For example, if your parents are in medicine, you're 53 times more likely than the average person to go into medicine.
Okay.
When it comes to politics, you are 110 times more likely to enter politics if one of your parents is a politician than the average person. That is huge.
110 times.
Yes.
Wow.
110 times more likely.
Would you call the Cuomos a political dynasty?
Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, and
yeah,
like in New York.
Yeah,
I guess so. Yeah,
yeah, you were like the Kennedys and all those.
I mean, Kennedy is clear.
Wasn't he married to a Kennedy?
Cuomo.
Yeah, the older one. Yeah.
So you know, like George Bush and George H.W. So George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, father son, American president. You have John Quincy Adams and John Adams, father son, American president.
He was married to JFK's niece.
Kerry.
Yeah.
Kerry Kennedy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the older Cuomo.
Yeah, the older Cuomo.
Yeah, man. So, I talked about the Nasingbe, right, in Togo.
Yes.
Who took over from his dad. But you also have father-daughter pairings.
Yeah.
So, you have Indira Gandhi.
Mm-hmm. And the guy's in Angola.
No, Angola did not become pregnant.
No, I mean, she didn't, but she ran the entire business side of the country.
Yeah, but I mean, like, somebody actually taking over the role of president or prime minister from their dad.
Okay.
So you have Park Geun-hye in South Korea, and you have Corazon Aquino in the Philippines. You have some brothers taking over, like in Malawi, taking over from a brother.
The Castros.
Is that another brother taking over from brother?
Yeah, brother taking over from brother.
You even have husband taking over from wife in Pakistan. I mean, she was killed. Benazir Bhutto, remember her assassination? Yeah. So today's facts. Number one, Sam Ikoku, the son of Alvin Ikoku, the Nigerian statesman on the 10 Naira notes, thought his dad's politics was quite boring and out of date. So he ran against his dad in the Southeastern House.
And he won.
And he beat his daddy.
Oh, God.
He beat his daddy.
Oh, no.
In a national election.
Kind of Shakespearean Greek tragedy is that?
I don't know, man. People always say, I want my child to be bigger than me. Well, number two, Joseph Kabila, the son of Laurent Kabila, who was president of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah.
Led a palace coup, killed his dad, and took over from his dad. Because, you know, DRC, they got a lot of diamonds there.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm not waiting for my time. Daddy, time to go.
I get to share. How old was he when he did that?
29.
I ask because I just feel like if you're like about to be 30, between 30 and 34.
Yeah.
That's the age, like when men are like, yes, I want what is mine and I will take it.
Are you shooting shots at your daddy because you're 30?
Hey, what's up, old man? In case you're listening,
your dad is ready to take what's his.
I'm gonna see you soon.
And number three, Berenice the Fourth forced her daddy to flee Egypt after she decided he was a weak ruler. She sent him packing to Rome.
Yeah.
And he went to go and beg for soldiers. I said, please, my eldest daughter has kicked me off the throne. Berenice the fourth is part of the Ptolemy family. She's from the Ptolemaic rule. She's actually Cleopatra the seventh, who's the Cleopatra that we know, mm-hmm. big sister.
Okay.
So Cleopatra's big sister ruled before Cleopatra.
Right.
By chasing Daddy Yui.
Okay. I think the dirty lie.
Should we do a quick summary of the facts?
Sure, let's go.
So, one, we have Sam Koku defeating his daddy. With number two, we have Joseph Kabila murking his daddy. And number three, we have Berenice chasing her daddy out of Egypt.
I think the dirty lie is Joseph killing his dad.
You're right.
Oh, thank God.
Why do you seem so relieved?
Because he's an African. I just don't really see a lot of
Africans killing daddy.
Yeah, patricide for sake of political office. I mean, it's possible, but I just
really, I feel like they usually wait for daddy to die.
Yeah, they usually wait respectfully. Yeah.
respectfully. So, okay, that's you're good. Let's start with the lie.
I knew the one about Cleopatra says, but yeah.
You didn't know about Sam Koku and Alvin Koku. So Joseph Kabila's dad was killed. And 10 days later, in 2001, Joseph Kabila is made president. Let me give you some background. Laurent Désiré Kabila was a Congolese revolutionary and politician who was the third president of the Democratic Republic of Congo
mm-hmm.
from 1997 until his assassination in 2001. He was a longtime opponent of Mobutu Sese Seko. You know, Emperor Mobutu?
Yeah.
He was the person who actually got Mobutu off the throne. Do you know Mobutu's like full name that he gave himself?
What?
Emperor Mobutu Sese Seko Kuku Ngwendu Wazanga Banga. He also renamed the country.
I'm sure in his country, in his language, just means the greatest president ever or something.
I can't remember the actual like meaning of his name, but he gave himself so many titles. But anyways, let's go back to Laurent Kabila. He led the Alliance for Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Congo, which is the ADFLC, which was a Rwandan and Ugandan sponsored rebel group that invaded Zaire and overthrew Mobutu during the First Congo War. Now, this is very important. It plays a very big role in his death because his rebel force, was partly funded by Rwanda and Uganda.
Oh.
They didn't do this out of the kindness of their hearts. The eastern part of the Congo, very rich in natural resources. They have a lot of diamonds. They got a lot of minerals. They got a lot of things that the whole world needs, right? They didn't like Mobutu. A lot of people didn't like Mobutu. He had consolidated power a lot. He's called himself emperor. There's a lot going on there. However, his assassination, he was shot in his office on the 16th of January, 2001. He was shot by a man called Rachidi. Rachidi had been a former child soldier under Kabila's army. And you'd find that Rachidi and his supposed getaway driver, Mirindi, were both former child soldiers.
Everyone in DRC was a former child soldier.
Not everyone, but they were like some of the child soldiers who were actually like recruited to fight for Kabila. And they became his bodyguards.
Right.
But his bodyguards were not very well paid. A lot of them were disgruntled. And a lot of them came from a tribe, a different tribe than Kabila. So Kabila is shot in his office by Rachidi. He is having a meeting. It's a very weird assassination because Rachidi comes into Kabila's office. He's having a meeting with his economic advisor. They're planning for the Francophone and France Economic Forum or something.
Right.
And
where they hope to sit down with the country of France.
Yes.
And discuss fair terms of engaging with France.
Yes.
Which has historically proven to be a thing.
Yes. Now, Rachidi like taps his feet, according to the eyewitness, who's the economic advisor. Rachidi taps his feet and like salutes the president and the president to like be like, I'm greeting you. And the president, like, oh yeah, come in. You know, this is his bodyguard. And he comes in and he just shoots him 3 times and then starts running. this for me is a very weird assassination.
No, no plan, just vibes.
So then Mirindi is supposedly in a getaway car waiting for Rashidi. So he's running towards the fence that he can jump to get to Mirindi. But the economic advisor says he chases after Rashidi, shouting. And then a second guard called Chinbagula shoots Rashidi in the leg. And he collapses. And he collapses and he's like, we've gotten the guy who shot the president. And then this other guy called Eddie Kapend, who was Kabila's chief security guy.
Yeah.
So Chimbanga is like another guard or whatever. But Eddie Kapend is like the biggest security person on Kabila's security team. He runs towards the scene. Like, he hears the gunshots. He sees that Rashidi has been shot in the leg and he's lying down there. And he says, according to him, in a fit of rage, he summarily executed him with a kamikaze. What do they call that thing? Crash cleaning off?
Yeah, you were correct the first time, surprisingly. Not with kamikaze. That's when the pilots
died. Yes, yeah. Is the crash... I don't know how to pronounce that.
I'm not going to try.
Okay.
I'm crashing scared.
Off? Anyways, the automatic gun, like, he finishes... Yeah. As they say, he finishes him off.
Sprays that boy down.
Sprays him down. Mirindi, the getaway driver, runs away. Now, I'm not even talking about Joseph Kabila, because Joseph had nothing to do with this, right? He's 29. He's chilling. Mm-hmm. He is second in command in the military. He is his dad's supposed heir to the throne, right? So he doesn't really have much problems. And also, at this point in time, they are fighting the Second Congo War. So they are at war.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this should put in context everything that happens, because everyone who responds to the situation responds to it as in, we are in a state of war and our president has been assassinated. It's not like... is a regular old Tuesday or something and they now shoot the president. Like, where our military is already engaged fighting a rebel army, the RCD, which was sponsored at this point by Rwanda. Because when they sponsored Kabila to take the DRC back from Mobutu, they thought he was going to come in and be like, cool, let me share all of Congo's resources with Rwanda, that tiny country to my right, because they helped me get the throne back or whatever. And he was like, no, I got Congo back for Congolese people. So you guys should pack your stuff and please leave my country. And they were not having it.
The best thing about the RCD,
yes,
is that it is now a political party. It was like a rebellion, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And after... after
Joseph came to power,
exactly, after Joseph came to
peace treaties,
and they became like a social liberal democratic party, political party.
I feel like that is their definition on the internet and not in real life.
I mean, it's hard to say because they are currently still like a major political party.
No,
and that
part
of the world is still
party.
Rife with, you know,
a lot of,
I mean, they won't call it a full on war now, but like, there are so many skirmishes, you might as well call it a war. Like,
no, I don't think you should call it a war.
Yeah.
Because it's like saying we are at war in Nigeria. Do you think we're at war right now? Because there are so many skirmishes.
I don't think it's like that, because they're much smaller. So,
no.
Well, DRC?
They're much bigger.
Really?
The Democratic Republic of Congo.
How is it much bigger than that?
Please go Google.
Let me see.
I'm talking about DRC. That big country. Rwanda is like one tiny pea next to Congo.
I think I was thinking of Rwanda. Never mind.
Rwanda is like Lagos, and then Congo is like...
Okay.
DRC is big.
Fair enough.
I mean, there are two Congos, but DRC is big. So yeah, now, who killed Kabila? So they have this huge trial, right? Where they arrest like over 100
people. It was
Rebecca
Vardy, sorry.
Oh my God, that took me 10 seconds.
It was Rebecca Vardy.
Nobody's going to understand that.
Of course they're going to understand
that. Nobody.
Nigeria is rare for football fans, and football fan gossip, white gossip, is big in Nigeria.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So I want you to guess, like, just guess two countries that will be involved here.
France?
Guess again.
Oh. Rwanda?
Yes, yes, another one. There's a big bad wolf that just always rears their head in random places.
America.
Of course.
Yeah.
What is America doing here? Ah, how do I tell this in a suspenseful way? I'm not even going to give you suspense. I'm going to give it to you straight.
America, they've always had they've always had interest in that part of Africa, though.
They've had interest in any part of Africa with
resources.
Natural resources.
Yeah.
That's just, let's keep it buck.
Yeah.
Now, Kabila was a former Marxist.
Mm-hmm.
Do the West like Marxists? No.
No.
He had chosen to align himself with Iran and China and Russia.
Okay.
Do they like this? Not very much. Kabila's death involves a Lebanese diamond trader, the Israelis, the Americans, the Rwandans, and the RCD rebel party.
Okay.
First and foremost, Rashidi, the guy who shot Kabila, when they searched him in his pocket, they found the number of Colonel Sue Ann Sandusky, the military attaché from the US to the DRC, who had just happened to leave the country.
Any relation to Penn State?
Sandusky?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because the Sanduskys are spelled differently. Her Sandusky has an I and I think he has a Y.
Fair
but
enough.
When I first saw her name, I was like, why does this sound very familiar? This woman, like, is she just a military attaché? I have to ask myself that, or is she a former CIA agent? Since we have a former CIA agent right now as an Instagram blogger, beauty blogger, I was like, let me try and look for Sue Ann Sandusky. Like, maybe she has an internet presence, which she does. And I found her LinkedIn. She's really active. She has a cute little LinkedIn picture next, standing next to a Jeep. Now, this woman was in Sudan. She was in Liberia. When she was in Liberia, she vowed that she would never serve in a country at peace. And she was known as the White-Haired Lady or the Silver Bullet.
I like that. That's a hot name.
Guess what other country she has been in?
Nigeria.
Yeah, she was the defense attaché in Abuja from 2004 to 2006. She was, let me just tell you her LinkedIn, just to know how many African countries this woman has tapped into.
Just see the countries.
U.S. Embassy Abuja, U.S. Embassy Abidjan, also accredited to Burkina Faso, Togo, Benin, Monrovia, Liberia as defense attaché July to November 2003. U.S. Embassy Kinshasa, accredited to Congo Brazzaville, also covered Sierra Leone, also covered out Zimbabwe. Then she touched outside Korea, Germany, Croatia, and Bosnia as a U.S. Army vet.
Catch flights, not feelings.
Now she's an adjunct instructor in Tiffin University. Anyways, they find the number of the U.S. attaché where she had literally signed, like, written, handwritten, and, like, her official card were in the pocket of the person who just shot the president.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that is not really...
That's a strange coincidence.
Now, the Mirindi guy, the getaway driver, was said to drive when Rachidi did not make it out. He drove straight to the house of Lebanese diamond dealer Hilal Heretier. Can't pronounce that. One person has a CIA. Oh, okay. Let me not say CIA. Has the US attaché's number in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
The getaway driver is running to Lebanese diamond dealer's house.
Yeah.
And why does a Lebanese diamond dealer have beef with Kabila? He was making bank, right?
Yeah.
On Congo diamonds. Mm-hmm. But they were fighting a war and Kabila needed money. So he made a deal with the Israelis. He made a deal with an Israeli company. He was like, I'll give you guys a monopoly on our diamonds if you give us $20 million. Yeah. Upfront, three-year renewable monopoly in exchange for $20 million and training. We want some IDF training.
Okay.
You guys can help us. Money and training. That's, and then get like our diamond. For who?
The Israelis.
Yeah. Three-year monopoly on diamonds.
That's crazy.
For 20M and some training.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but this Lebanese guy was pissed off because this means his diamond supply has been cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts meeting with US people, some Rwandan and RCD people, and some of the president's bodyguards.
That's interesting. Do you think that could ever happen in Edge?
What?
Just... I just feel like, yeah, we're corrupt, but Nigerians have such a massive interest in their country.
Which ones?
No, I mean, like, you know, even the bad ones and, like, the people that, like, are running us into the ground are still Nigerians.
Yeah.
I mean, historically, yeah, we've dealt
but
with
this
the
is
US.
Not a Nigerian guy. Like,
no, I
this
know.
Is a Lebanese guy.
I know, no, I'm saying I just can't see a bunch of foreigners attempting to kill a sitting president or governor or
and some greedy young Nigerians who are disillusioned will not join him.
They will join him.
Uh-huh.
I guess it could happen.
It could happen anywhere.
That's interesting.
You just have to have the right factors in place. And also before this also, I think about three months before this, Kabila had killed who he considered was like his main rival, who was a part of his rebel army. And that guy had actually personally recruited this Rashidi and Mirindi. Oh. And they were from similar tribes. So there was a lot of actual internal like disillusionment animosity. And animosity already.
So what?
So they just, I think outsiders just need to tap into that. Yeah. Like they find your weak spot.
Yeah.
Bam.
What decade was this?
This is 2001.
Jeez.
It's not long ago.
Yeah. They, 20 years ago, but still.
Please stop trying to remind me I'm old. It was just 2000s. But so Mirindi runs to the Lebanese diamond dealer's house, right? And they escape. The Congolese army find out, go to the diamond dealer's house, can't find him, take his cousins, his brothers, and whoever is in the building, and summarily execute 11 Lebanese citizens.
Wow.
That night.
Wow.
Yeah. So all these people are arrested. They arrest like a bunch of people. The guy who finished off the shooter, they also arrest him. The Eddie Capend, he was seen as like, he was now scapegoated as the head of this conspiracy to kill the president, because they were like, why did you kill the shooter? Are you trying to cover your tracks? You know, he gave like a speech after the president was shot calling for calm. They said he was using that to actually try and get power. But a lot of international bodies and a lot of observers think that the trial was a sham. Mm. They had like 100 and something people. They found them guilty, sentenced them to death. Jeez. They have not carried out any of the death sentences, right?
So where are the people now?
They're in jail in Kinshasa, and Joseph Kabila actually released some of them, okay. Including Capen, I think, like...
The ones who aren't, like, serious...
No, so if anyone is interested in seeing, like, the full story, there's an Al Jazeera document called Murder in Kinshasa. It can give you more color into what happened. But essentially, because they couldn't figure out who did it, was it the Rwandans? Was it the RCP by themselves?
The US?
RCD, sorry. Was it the US? Was it the Lebanese diamond dealer just by himself? It doesn't seem likely it was him just by himself. But you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many hands at play. So they're like, if we can't find who did it in a country that is so tumultuous, we just have to pretend we found the culprits and arrest them and hold them to just kind of solve it and be able to move on. And another problem that Joseph Kabila has is that after he came into power after his dad, he had signed a peace treaty with Rwanda to end the war. He signed a treaty with RCD, which is why they're now a political party. You know, he's opened DRC up to business for US interests and stuff like that. So he's kind of, it's not really in his best interest to really, like, he's kind of had to make deals with the devils. Mm. Like the people who won't kill the president, but two, most importantly, killed his daddy.
Fam.
Yeah. That is the story of Kabila. I know I did not really give you guys a proper ending to that story. I will tell you that...
I mean, it's still ongoing anyway.
It's still ongoing. I would tell you that Mirindi, the getaway driver, now lives in Sweden.
Imagine if he's an Uber driver in Sweden.
I think he might be, because this is rude, but they interview him in the Al Jazeera documentary I watched. And he kind of has a setup of an Uber driver, like the whole car holding, GPS, Google Maps,
Kango hat.
Yeah. And he was like, and they interview him with some other escapees.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, we're chilling. We're 45 kilometers from the South Pole or something, or from the North Pole. Like, nobody's going literally, to find us where we are.
I love the fact that, like, you probably applied to Uber and they were like, what's your experience driving? And he was like, well. Have I got a story for you?
So he claims, obviously, he claims his innocence. I would just like to say that. He claims he's innocent. All of this is allegedly.
Mm.
The prosecutor, the military prosecutor from the trial, because I just say, you see, dear as he, the issue is plenty. The military prosecutor who was making his name, sending Capen to jail and all these people to jail, he fell out of favor. He was framed for a crime.
Yikes.
The judge, the military general that was the judge, he fell out of favor. He was dismissed. So that prosecutor that was sentenced, and the funny thing is that the judge who he argued in front of for those other people who sentenced them to death was also the judge who sentenced him to death, was actually the same judge. And that judge too is now no longer a judge.
Oh God.
Problem.
Live by the sword.
Bro, their problems skill are plenty. Okay. So which of the truths should we do first? Berenice or Sammy Cuckoo?
Well, let's save Berenice for the last. I like a good, ancient, epic last.
To round up the day.
Yeah.
Okay. Alvan Azina Ikoku was born on the 1st of August 1900 and died on the 18th of November 1971. He was born in Aruchukwu, present-day Abia States, and he was a Nigerian educationist, statesman, and an activist. He was part of the United National Independence Party. His son, Sam Ikoku, was a socialist and First Republic opposition leader in the Eastern House of Assembly. He worked together with intellectuals such as Rotimi Williams and Anthony Enaro and formed the radical wing of the Action Group Party, which on the mandate of Obafemi Awolowo sought to remove the ethnic coloration which it wore and make it a national party. So they're trying to, AG was trying to move from just being like Yoruba Party to a national party. So instead of like just a regional powerhouse. But Sam Ikoku was a democratic socialist and an anti-imperialist. He was very strongly anti-imperialist.
He wasn't messing with the white.
Yeah. He was born on the 24th of July, 1922, in present day Cross River States. So how does Sam or SG Ikoku beat Daddy Alvan Ikoku?
With grit, honesty, and the faith of God. Was that right?
What?
You said, how did he beat his dad?
Yes. You know what I think is really cool? Because him and his dad represented two different generations. His dad was in the Eastern House of Assembly in the First Republic. And he felt like they were kind of too aligned with the British. You know, First Republic, Nigerians, indigenous people did not have that much power. It was kind of like pretend power.
And they talked like this.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yes, well, you see, Nigeria is doing very well, you see. We're a struggling country, but we're doing our best to really uplift the African continent.
I feel like you have to, like, squeeze the size of your cheeks to be able to speak like that.
This is how we spoke in the 60s. You see, Nigeria is getting better and better. I think I'm getting more, like, the more I talk, the more I get into it.
I really like that 1960s northern accent.
I don't like any of them.
What? I like you it. Have you listened to Taffa Balewa?
Yes, I have.
We in Nigeria appreciate the advantages which the size of our country and of its population give us, but we have absolutely no aggressive intentions. We shall never impose ourselves upon any other country and shall treat every African territory, big or small, as our equal, because we honestly feel that it is only on that basis of equality that peace can be maintained in our continent.
Oh, it sounded so sweet.
It's crazy. Like, imagine someone like Obasanjo just like being in the room and hearing these guys talk. Just like, what's his old?
But he must have, right? He must have.
Yes, he was. Yeah. It was,
but you know, also another thing for me that actually like just really has me kicking is the fact that, like, no offense, but it's the fact that you have all Nigerian leaders speaking like, and the, you know, we must be socialist, we must be anti-imperialist. And you have to take off. And then you have Nigerian leaders off today saying, broom, broom.
Broom, 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 broom. Broom, broom. Broom, 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 broom.
Oh, that man is trying to kickstart his brain.
Why, Jack Asaba? You eat corn.
It is only funny because it is not funny.
You eat corn. Eat cassava. Eat curry. Come on. I love how, like, he says it, like, haven't you guys thought about it?
Like, haven't you thought about it?
Like, how am I the only one?
50 million youths.
How am I the only one here?
Recruit 50 million youths. Remember, curry. What do you do when you get your recruitment letter for the Nigerian army? Your time?
I buy stock in corn. like the corn industry, just like what's the opposite of short? I'll buy the dip.
The only thing I can say is that he's right about is that Nigerian youth do like corn. Because the other day my friend was going through heartbreak. I was like, should I stop by Hans and Renee? Do you want super yogurt? Would you like some cake? And she was like, no, but if you see some roasted corn, I was in actually.
I can't lie, like, I think till this election period is over, I feel like we should all just not eat corn. I don't know.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like
I should just give up corn as a point to who?
Just for a year and a half.
Oh. Yeah. Anyways, I'm sorry. Let's go back to Samuel Ukoku and his dad, Alvin. Sam's anti-imperialism and democratic socialism, I think, personally takes a turn because he approved of the very unpopular General Sani Abacha's regime. But before he does that, he beats his father. Like his father, him and his dad were both trade unionists, but they just disagreed in how to move Nigeria forward. So in the March 15th, 1957, Southeastern House of Assembly elections, Sam Ukoku beat his dad, Alvin Ukoku, mercilessly, and took his seat. Alvin Ukoku still went on to help us get an educational bill of rights in 1962, which was a bill that called for primary school education to be free for 6 years nationwide in Nigeria. But his son did take his seat.
Why are you whispering?
Am I whispering? Really? People always tell me I do this podcast in bedroom voice. His son took his seat.
Yeah, there you go.
Both men are very important Nigerian statesmen, and yeah, I quite like a friendly battle. Mm. Like I quite like my dad and I both unionists. We both believe in Nigerian self-determination. We both believe in Igbo participation in national politics, but we don't agree on how that should happen, and we don't agree on the details, so we're going to run against each other because we're from the same place.
That's very interesting. I like that.
Yeah, I quite like that, you know. Yeah. If you don't know what Alvin Ukoku looks like, he's the guy with the glasses on the 10 naira notes. If you don't know what that looks like, you are a Gen Z.
Or a victim of a very bad economy, which a 10 naira note means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, but if you are old enough, you will know what it looks like.
Well, no, I think Gen Z's will know what it looks like.
Geez, how much is super yogo? Actually, this is a real question. Okay, this guy told me super yogo is 200, but I was like, maybe he's charging me equity price. But the very confusing part for me is that I remember when Fine Ice Orange was 10 or 20 naira.
Yeah, same.
Like, I literally would have 10, like 20 naira after school.
Do you know what this feels like? This feels like when I was a kid, my dad would tell me like cars were like 300 naira when he was a kid.
And you'd be like, "What? Well, how is that possible?"
Yeah. And now you're telling Gen Z's, "Oh yeah, I remember when Super Yogo was 10 naira." And they're like, "No, you don't. Stop lying. Stop."
No, but also, can you remember when those chewing gums were 1 naira?
Oh, banana?
Yeah, the banana gum.
With the trivia inside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ah, if I had a pack of that, I'll just be opening it to figure out things to talk about on the podcast.
Oh, what a time to be alive. Imagine us having to reminisce about the good old days. Goody, and we're youth.
You remember Goody Goody?
Of course I remember Goody Goody.
That's out of circulation, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Is Gala also circulation?
Gala is still around.
Gala, they just reduced that sausage to nothing. Yeah,
the mid such a Gala. The streets.
Oh, what a time. This country is. Oh, yeah, let's go to Berenice. Berenice's dad did not like what she did at all.
He didn't like the fact that she deposed him and sent him into exile.
Yeah.
What a tough parent.
Do you know what he now did when he came back? Won't you just be like, girl, that was a bit much, you know? Mm-hmm. You should not do that.
Yeah.
But what do you think he did?
Well, I mean, it was thousands of years ago, right? So I'm thinking cut her head off.
Yeah, exactly. He beheaded her. So let's say a little bit about Berenice the Fourth, Cleopatra's big sis. You know how these people were very like unexciting with their names? Cleopatra the Seventh. Who's the Cleopatra we know? Guess what her mom's name was?
Cleopatra?
Yeah, Cleopatra the Fifth. Because she also had another older sister, Cleopatra the Sixth.
In fairness, names then, especially in royal houses, were more like titles. So, no, it's true. Especially because, you know, Cleopatra was from, what do you call it?
Greek. Yeah. Greece.
And those guys, even with like all the Ramses, all those guys, what they did was in their royal households, they had like actual boring names that they used to refer to each other. And all the Cleopatra, blah, 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 all of that were just names that...
were their official name.
Yeah, I mean, no, they even like... for the courts, for the gentry, and even for the slaves population, all those Cleopatra names are just titles that sort of indicated the kind of what they stood to inherit. You know, the positions they stood to occupy.
But then, why is Berenice? She's the older daughter.
That's interesting. Was she the first Berenice?
Hmm?
Was she the first one?
No.
Yeah, so it's probably
Berenice the Fourth. Yeah, she's exactly, the older daughter, though.
So it's probably like a title.
But then, why are there two Cleopatra daughters?
I don't know, man. There's probably a good reason for it. Maybe we should, as a history podcast.
No, so Cleopatra's dad, right? He was actually the illegitimate son. He was a Ptolemy, but he was an illegitimate son living in Syria. We have no idea who Berenice and Cleopatra's mom, Cleopatra the Fifth. We actually have no idea who she is.
Oh.
Cleopatra was not Egyptian, she was not. The Egyptians that we see celebrated in movies and all the Cleopatras and all the Ptolemies are the whitest ones for a particular reason. Most Egyptians were actually black, like us.
Yeah.
I used to think that was a Hotep thing. Like, I thought the Hoteps were just being Hotep when they said that. But Egyptians were actually black.
Yeah.
Like, the Ptolemies ruled for, at this point in time where Berenice comes and snatches the throne from daddy, it's been 300 years of Ptolemy rule. So that's one family that's been ruling for longer than America's existed at this point. You know what I'm saying? So this is a long time. But it's so funny because I honestly did not know Egyptians were black. Apparently that's why all the Sphinx and all these like statues
have
their noses removed, because they had Negro noses. I like my Negro nose and Jackson 5 nostrils. Hey, shout out to Beyonce. Anyways, so their daddy was the illegitimate son. And you know, the Ptolemies are known for inbreeding and infighting and a lot of bloody stuff. So they had basically killed all the legitimate sons.
Mm-hmm.
So they called him back from Syria. He was living in Syria with his babies and his baby mama. And they called him back that, please come from Syria and be king of Egypt. Like,
what about this guy? Oh, yeah, he was poisoned. So, what about my cousin?
Stabbed in the back.
Stabbed him in the back. But you'll be safe, though, I promise. We're done with that.
So this is Ptolemy the 12th. So he comes with his wife, Cleopatra the 5th, to Egypt. And they bring their kids, Berenice, Cleopatra, and Ptolemy. Yeah, those are the names of the children. When they get there, at this point in the reign, Egypt has become a state of the Roman Empire. So the Roman Empire, like, they pay taxes to Rome and stuff like that. Ptolemy is not very popular in Alexandria and Egypt. Alexandria is like their base at this point in time. Because he's borrowed a lot of money from the Roman Empire. The Egyptian Empire is not doing very well at this point in time. And then a kicker, his brother was the king of Cyprus, leader of Cyprus. Rome invades Cyprus and he's like, I owe them money, I can't really say much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a debtor. I cannot now come outside and now say, you keep my brother. They will now ask me for the money I'm owing them. So people are really upset by this. That's why Berenice takes the throne from daddy. She's like, you're weak. Bye. So she takes the throne from daddy. And daddy, and she supposedly supposed to have been co-ruling with her sister Cleopatra the Sixth, right? Ptolemy runs to Rome like, please, my daughter has snatched my throne, apparently with Cleopatra VII, who's at this point in time around 10 years old.
Yeah,
so she's close to daddy. So he goes to Rome. Rome gives him more money and an army. They're like, well, go back and claim your throne from your daughter.
I won't be able to pay you back if they take over.
Who's like in her 20s? I'm trying to just imagine this, but it's very hard to picture. Anyways, he comes back. He actually, with the force of the Roman legions, defeats Berenice in battle and beheads her.
He beheaded her.
He beheaded her.
Mm-hmm. Off with it.
Off with your head. Dance till you're dead.
You know, it's funny that like their family were descendants of Alexander the Great. Yeah, I find that very interesting.
Right.
I don't know. It's just I mean, I know they were the last of the Ptolemies to rule Egypt. Not the last rulers of Egypt in general.
Yeah, but that's like, I think it's very like, I think it's up that it's a foreigner that would bring a centuries old empire down. Like,
no, I love it. I do you know what's crazy is that like these guys just ruled in such a bizarre way. Like most of them couldn't speak Egyptian.
They were like the Lannisters. So Cleopatra the Seventh,
yeah,
which is the famous Cleopatra who was everyone knows Cleopatra. She's the first of the Ptolemies to speak an Egyptian language.
So imagine,
they've been ruling for 300 years without even being able to speak to the people.
Your family rules for 300 years and the last ruler is the one who learns the language.
Bro, that is it's so weird. But I think something else that I find weird, because it's like inbreeding, marry your brother. Like Cleopatra was supposed to marry her brother, technically did, right? Ptolemy the, I don't even know at this point in time, the 15th or whatever, but she's supposed to co-rule with her younger brother and marry him. But she also kind of performed the role of her father's queen when he came back, like from the age of 10. Not that she married her dad in a sexual way, but in like a ceremonial way of like, because you know they had both male and female gods.
Yeah.
So they kind of needed like co-rulers to represent a unity kind of the people. But yeah, man, I don't even know why. Like, I always say this, but I think Cleopatra is famous because of white privilege and because of sexism.
I mean, a big part of why she's even like, I think a big part of why is just the whole Mark Antony thing.
Mark Antony and Caesar.
Caesar.
Yeah, but it's
Shakespeare
of,
writing about it.
I guess Shakespeare helps a lot.
Yeah.
But this whole romanticizing of Cleopatra and her being a representation of the Egyptian empire and like common imagination, it's so weird because
she didn't look like them.
She wasn't one of them.
She spoke her Egyptian with a very, very,
it's like how
Greek
I
accent.
It would, it is actually like how I would speak French. But yeah, man, that is my family racks for today.
See you guys next week, where we'll be discussing
siblings.
Bum, bum, bum.
If you've ever fought your sibling.
Bum, bum, bum. That was my scary sound.
I'm so happy it didn't work. God is on my side today.
Nonsense.
No, we're not talking about, but don't worry. A sibling one is not going to get gory, man. We'll keep it light. Have a lovely week.
Bye, guys.